baby back door, baby fall off, sipping codeine cause I got a killer cough. Let me sit sideways in the big bins. Oh, you boys, they my brothers, they my friends.
There's not one guy, one person in the history of this program that's bigger than the program.
Mayfield on play action.
You're listening to Brandon Drum and Parker Thune. This is the OU Insider Under the Visor podcast.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another OU Insider Under the Visor Sooners pregame podcast, college football playoff edition. And you know what that means. We have guests. Big guest, nonetheless. My name is Brandon Drum, Travis Davison, Parker Thune, and that is JD Pickell, On Three's national analyst. You guys know him. You see him all the time on YouTube. JD, appreciate you joining us, man. Thank you so much for joining us today.
I appreciate y'all having me on. I appreciate y'all being brave enough to have me on here. I picked against y'all against Tennessee, picked against Oklahoma, against Alabama. And so y'all, I think, are the real the trailblazers here. So I thank you to y'all for being courageous enough to get me on your airwaves here.
Hey, the internet may hold it against you. We do not.
Okay.
100%. I'll take that. We had you on, I believe, Oklahoma won.
Michigan?
Yeah. Pre-Tennessee. That's right. It was post-Tennessee. Vibes were bad.
Yep.
Go to Neil in hand. So maybe, just maybe, correlation is causation. I don't know. We'll see.
Yep, that's amazing, man. Well, as always, this podcast is brought to you by Riverwind Casino. Parker, we got a lot to talk about, but before we do that, we got to do some sponsors.
Yes, we do, folks. Riverwind Casino is our presenting sponsor. They have been the OKC Metro's premier gaming destination for nearly two decades now. Almost 3,000 electronic games, table games, bars, and dining options, plus the best live music in the Metro. It's no surprise that Riverwind is always a good time. Shout out as well to our friends at Janaking, the greatest team to ever clean and a proud partner of OU Athletics, delivering spotless results and solutions from stadiums to any size business across the country. Check out which of their solutions is best for you or your business by going to janaking.com. That's J-A-N-I-K-I-N-G.com. And finally, folks, a word from Brunt Workwear. As harsh winter approaches here in the state of Oklahoma, you need to get yourself a pair of Brunt's Marin work boots. They're suitable for any occasion. If you're going to be outdoors, you're shoveling snow, you're working in the mud, whatever the case may be. Look, choosing work boots used to mean sacrificing comfort or durability. If they felt good, they didn't last. And if they lasted, they wrecked your feet. Brunt didn't like that. And so they built tough boots that feel great from day one. No break-in, no sore feet, because people out there doing the real work shouldn't have to choose between comfort and durability. And Brunt isn't just about work boots. They offer a full range of high-performance gear built for tough jobs, from heavy-duty work pants to weather-resistant jackets. Brunt designs durable, reliable workwear to keep you protected and productive in any condition. So with temps dropping and the holidays coming up, it's time to treat yourself or the hardworking man in your life to real comfort. Skip the throwaway gifts and go for Brunt Workwear. Our listeners are going to get $10 off their entire order with code OU Insider at checkout. That's bruntworkwear.com and use code OU Insider. Order today and let them know you heard it here on the show.
All right. I'm sorry. I totally got distracted there because I saw David Pollock on Twitter and have y'all seen what his kid, he like circled his kid singing like in the choir. It's hilarious. It meant more because this kid had no part of it, wanted no part of it, shaking its head while everybody else is clapping and singing. And it's just hating life.
The joke is they were singing Rocky Top is what the point was. Okay. They were singing Rocky Top and he was back there not singing Rocky Top. So I imagine he would, you know, participate if they, you know, there were other songs there, but he wasn't singing Rocky Top.
That it does mean more than that. Is awesome. That is awesome. I just saw the Christmas stuff in the background because I didn't have it on loud, but that's freaking hilarious. All right. OU Alabama, JD, I know you've broke this game down a ton already. You've probably watched a bunch of film on all this type of stuff, but for you, this game, Is this a game to, because it's been asked on our board, is this a game to get the elephant off of Brent Venables' back, if you will?
I think in some ways it would be a what else do you have to say about me kind of win. Because I think the first time the game happened, everyone, myself included, is like, well, Bama did, you know, X, Y, and Z. They outgained Oklahoma. They held the ball for longer than Oklahoma. They lost penalized in Oklahoma. And still Oklahoma found a way to win the game. So I think there's some people here saying, good win. We'll take a win in Tuscaloosa every single day of the week. However, did you really play well enough to win that game in all areas? And can you do it again? So I think, one, it would dispel this idea of defense bailed you out, kind of fluky. You got to find a way to get it done. I think also, too, what I've been saying for the better part of the last few weeks, contrary to what my picks have said, I think it just completely dispels any idea that Brent Venables is a good coordinator and is a coordinator in the head coach spot. Like, I think that whole narrative, you go beat about Alabama twice, once at their place and once at your place in a playoff setting. Like, at that point in time, what else do you have to say about Brent Venables, the head coach? And I think I get where the narrative came from of, well, he was a DC for so long. He, you know, has this many national titles as a DC. Some guys are just cut out to be coordinators, not head coaches. And I think his path at Oklahoma and the context around each season he's walked into hasn't done him a ton of favors, because he gets there and his whole roster is ravaged by the portal. So he's trying to put it together with sticks and glue and doesn't have the right personnel. They go 6-7. Then he gets his guys in there. And they go 10-2. And then the next year they go to the SEC and they didn't have what they needed on the offensive line, have a laundry list of injuries at receipt. Like, there's a bunch of things that hit the fan. And, you know, the first year in the SEC, you can't have things hit the fan and have success. So, like, we're looking at Brent Venables' entire time in Norman in a 3-year sample size. And to me, only one of those years, I think, is really fair to hone in on and pick through what's happened over the course of the year. So to answer your question here, I think it dispels the he's not a head coach narrative. And also it's like a what else do you have to say about Brent Venables and Oklahoma if they get it done?
Now, JD, I've made this comparison before, but it feels like playing this Oklahoma team is kind of akin to wrestling an alligator. Like, that alligator drags you into the swamp, you're done for. Like, Oklahoma gets you in their territory, then you're toast. There's a formula that this team has for winning football games. They displayed it time and again throughout the month of November. And so from your perspective, what does Alabama have to do, especially on the road, to avoid getting dragged into an Oklahoma type of football game?
I think the higher point total this game is played in, the less it favors Oklahoma, which isn't breaking news. I think everyone in Norman feels that way too when you won the last two games scoring 17. But if Alabama forces that Oklahoma offense, it's been a little bit lackluster over the past couple of weeks, into chase mode, where right off the bat, it's 13-0 Bama going into half. It's 17-3 Bama. Like, if there's any sort of margin there where Oklahoma has to abandon their game plan of leaning on the defense and just doing enough on the offensive side, at that point, I don't think it's a game that Oklahoma can't win, but it's a game that would absolutely favor Alabama by nature of what you haven't seen from the offense. Now, not to be the guy dealing out the hopium here, but I'm a glass half full guy. There's no way around it. People think it's good for YouTube and clicks. And like, I hear all that. It's just the way I'm wired, y'all. I can't help but feel a little bit like the time off for Oklahoma, as much as it's going to do for John Mateer physically, I really can't wait to see what it does for him mentally. Because I think y'all would probably have the most to say about this. I'm watching John Mateer in the first month of the season, and like, that dude's a wild horse, bucking Broncos, throwing his body all over the place, running the football, and then, you know, you get the thumb injury, and whether he was more healthy or less healthy during those last couple of weeks, he just didn't look like he had that same reckless abandon level to him. So that's what I'm curious to see. Do we see John Mateer with the saddle off here, bucking Bronco mode, like he was in September? Because if that's the case now, then the game script had just laid out where Alabama is able to push Oklahoma to a place where they're chasing points. They don't want to throw the football. That wouldn't exist if you get September John Mateer. So to answer your question, Alabama scoring quick would be something that I'd be uncomfortable with here if I was a Sooner fan.
If I, you know, those graphics that go up every game, you know, especially late in the season, it's the what's at stake, right? They'll say, what's at stake? With a win, this happens. You know, with a loss, this happens, right? You see it often this time of the year in the NFL, right? It's a what's at stake? Okay, you missed the playoffs. What's at stake, right? Well, I think when you walk this game out, what I feel like the what's at stake is a bigger question. It's how do people talk about defense? Right. And, you know, when, like you just said a second ago, and this is just this is just common. We've all said it, bailed out by defense, right?
Yeah.
Not often do you hear the term bailed out by offense, right? It's just, it, I mean, you don't get a lot. We got a lot around here under Lincoln Riley. It really felt like, offense was bailing out a bad defense. But you know, people have turned college football into such a beauty contest. Into Notre Dame fans saying, have you seen how many points we can score? Have you seen we can do this, that, and the other? And I think if Brent Venables is able to win this game and, you know, give Alabama a back-to-back four-loss season, you know, kind of change the way people talk about physicality again. You remember the Michigan-Ohio State games where under Harbaugh where everybody said, hey, look, you know, this Michigan team, they just beat them with physicality. And Ohio State, the finesse team, they've got all the fancy wide receivers under Hartline, and they've got this, that, and the other. But Michigan just beats the crap out of them in the trenches, and it ends up working okay. I think Oklahoma has the opportunity to take the mantle as the most physical, the most damaging team in college football with a win tomorrow because I don't think Michigan has it anymore. Georgia obviously is always going to be in that conversation. Alabama was always at the top of that conversation. So when you look across college football, I think what's at stake is the conversation around defense nationally, because there were a lot of people that thought Oklahoma shouldn't be in the playoff because of how bad their offense was. And nobody's saying two things about any defenses in the country. You know what I mean?
I think you're absolutely right. I think you look to it, how Oklahoma got to this spot. Like Tate Sendell and that defense were out here just snatching games from the Tennessee game to round one against Alabama. Like, I think it's a great point. We talked about it on our show a little bit the other day. You see this trend. I have to imagine there's a line graph somewhere that exists that correlates to the evolution of the spread offense and that becoming more of a thing in college football, and then the high school level and the popularity of like 7-on-7 teams. I bet they're just tracking just like this. And then Brent Venables rolls out there with one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC on the other side of this thing. And for the second time gets him, for the second time puts him in a blender. Like that in itself, I think, to your point, it's going to be a good crop of portal QBs, but I wonder just a little bit, if I'm on the opposing side here, trying to not give them as much NIL, it's like, hey, we could just do what Oklahoma did. We could go take that $3 million we were going to give you here, insert portal quarterback, and we'll go get a freak show edge. We'll go get a couple of linebackers, and we'll rule that way. You can, you know, you can do your thing with the 7-on-7 stuff. We'll win the way that Oklahoma won. So I think it's a great point. I think it's something we'll have to watch for. And I think we look at the top of college football too. In this 12-team bracket, like eight of the top 20 defenses, I want to say, are in this 12-team field. So like to your point, everyone likes to talk about the quarterbacks and the points, and it's like, hey man, defense. As much as college football changes, defense still seems to be a key ingredient to going out and winning national titles.
You brought that up. You said eight of the top 20 are in the college football playoff field. You look at what Oklahoma went up against as far as defense all year, and everybody wants to point to the offense isn't very good. You talk to the people in the Switzer Center, and they'll sit there and they'll point out, well, oh, you went up against seven of the top 50 defenses, top 40, I think it was top 42 defense, 43 defenses in all of college football all season. And do you think that gets overlooked a little bit on maybe they have issues? We all know they have issues. They got three starting freshmen on the offensive line. In the SEC, that's not a recipe for great success as far as running the ball, because you're going to get pushed around quite a bit. There's a huge discrepancy in strength between an 18-year-old and a fifth and sixth-year senior, 23, 24-year-old, that's been through the strength conditioning for a long time. But still, do you think that gets overlooked a little bit, the fact that they've had such a strenuous schedule? Not just the strenuous schedule, I don't think gets overlooked, but the defensive part, kind of. Do you think that gets glossed over a little bit as far as Oklahoma goes?
Yeah, I think it does. And I think some of it, too, is – it's easy to explain why when you see Oklahoma not having success offensively. You point to the John Mateer injury. You point to, you mentioned the Young Bucks on the offensive line. You point to what Oklahoma was last year. And there's a lot of people now we know that just fly over college football, look at logos, look at records, kind of watch highlights. They're like, oh yeah, OU was bad on offense last year. Of course they're bad on offense this year. And they don't know that John Mateer transferred in, that Van Arbuckle. Like there's a lot of just different things I think people aren't accounting for when it comes to Oklahoma. So I think that's an interesting angle. I don't think people are evaluating that quite as heavily. And here's my thing. Like, I don't know if I give Oklahoma quite as much that pass because I saw them go out there against what a top 20 defense in Michigan and carve them up in that first half. So like for me, I'm like, I said this on our show. I think it is not fair anymore to keep expecting Oklahoma to look like how they looked in September because of everything we mentioned, the O-line, John Mateer, whatever. But at the same time, like, I'm still going to ask for it. Like, it's not fair to show up at Krispy Kreme when, you know, after the Sunday morning rush and say, you got any more glazed donuts, but I'm still going to ask for it because I know y'all had it at some point. I know, if Travis has got that barbecue roll, man, and I show up after the lunch rush, I'm still going to ask for it because I know it was here at one point in time. So that's my philosophy there. I've seen it before. So it's fair to ask for, maybe not to expect.
Do you have any more in the back type question?
You got 3 weeks. Can we get in the kitchen a little bit?
But to your point, what happens if Michigan Mateer shows up, Auburn Mateer shows up, can Oklahoma make a run? Do you wholeheartedly believe, no fluff, honest truth, do you think Oklahoma can make a run?
I think Oklahoma can play for the semis if Mateer shows up. And then at that point, all bets are off. I think they can beat Indiana. I'll say that much. I think that defense, as good as Ohio State's defense is, I think people that watch Oklahoma and their aggression on that side of the football, it's a little bit different. Okay, I think it would have Fernando Mendoza in a bit of a blender. So my whole thing is whoever wins this game is going to be a house money gambler, is going to be extremely frisky. And you're playing an Indiana team that hasn't played a game since the Big Ten title game, which will be, what, a month at that point in time? And so I think, like, the winner of this game, should it be Oklahoma with the formula you're laying out here with September Mateer, absolutely Oklahoma can make a run. And I know that's going to sound like, I know I'm on an Oklahoma show, I know I'm the Hopium guy, whatever, but, like, that is the fact of the matter. If September Mateer shows up, I think all bets are off.
Hey, JD, I'm going to ask you the one question that if you were to pose it to the fan base at large right now, you probably would get the greatest diversity of answers. It's a hard question for a lot of folks to answer. But I think given your expertise and how much you've studied this team, I think you're going to be pretty well equipped to give an educated opinion here. How would you grade Ben Arbuckle's first season as Oklahoma's offensive coordinator?
First season for Ben Arbuckle, I think I would grade him. This sounds so, it's like giving a 7 out of 10 answer. You know, like you hate when people say 1 through 10, what would you give this? They say a 7. You're like, that gives me no, it gives me no, gets me nowhere. I would give him a B-. Some of it is you are trying to call an offense with two different versions of a quarterback over this year. And the other part of this too, you have to believe it's been, I think, well documented on every given Oklahoma broadcast we've seen since Texas. It's like, hey, he's calling it different now. They know that off. They know that defense is so good. They can afford to punt it here. You know, they get into 50, they can hit a field goal. So, like, I'd probably say B-. The minus comes from just the lack of output. Like, at the end of the day, the job is to score points. He knows that. We know that. And you haven't seen as much of that here down the stretch. So I think anything lower than a B-, I would be really curious as to understand the reasoning why someone would feel that way. Not that there's not a place for it, but I just think so much of his job is he's dealing with what he has to work with. And you got a quarterback who, you know, has to get thumb surgery and comes back extremely quickly in the most important part of your year. Like, it's not a totally fair sample size. So B- would be my answer. What is the majority of the answers across Sooner Nation? Are we like, if that's the bell curve here, what's the standard deviation away from B- when it comes to the Sooner faithful?
Well, there are some folks that place all the blame for the offensive struggles on Mateer and thereby absolve Arbuckle completely. There are others that just want him fired and have wanted him fired since like week 6. I think because you lose the Texas game in that fashion, there's always going to be a pretty substantial portion of the fan base that just wants to burn it all down, regardless of how long it's been in place, regardless of what it actually looks like and what the overall standard and metric of success has been. You lose to Texas 23-6. There are some people that just want everybody fired at that point. But opinions on Arbuckle are all over because everybody has a different opinion as to how much of Oklahoma's offensive peaks and valleys throughout the season are primarily due to Mateer not making plays, and or primarily due to Arbuckle not scheming it right.
Yeah.
Can I say this? I don't know that we've seen the Jim Nagy effect just yet.
We
like how awesome was that day in Norman when you found out he was the GM and you're saying, okay, the roster is going to be at a top tier level here going forward. He's, you know, from the NFL background, he knows what the dudes look like that go play on Sundays. And like, that was exciting, but he had what, one portal cycle in the spring to work with into, and yeah, it was a good portal cycle. Like, I know everyone was fired up about Jay, not your boy included, when he came over to Norman. It hasn't worked out. I think we all hoped it would,
but hey, but, Tate Sandell, right?
Tate said, I mean, that beautiful left leg. I mean, he's, I mean, just missed his first kick and that's it since he's been in Norman. Like, so I think the thing I would push back on for people saying, ah, fire Arbuckle, whatever. I'm like, I don't even know that he has what he needs just yet. And you're still in the college football playoff with the toughest schedule in the country. Like I thought I was the guy that was like higher on OU than most, having them at 9-3. And of course they go 10-2 and make the playoff. And it's like, you never believed in us. It's like, yeah, I mean, I guess not. But, anyway, I said to bring this home, I think the Jim Nagy effect will have an interesting parallel to what we see from Ben Arbuckle here in the next couple of seasons.
Travis.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously we're talking OU, but at the same time, like if we're keeping this just about how this game's going to go, you know, it's always about who's hot at the right time, right? That's in every sport. Mm-hmm. When can you catch fire? When are you playing your best ball? You want to play your best ball at the end of the year. Well, Oklahoma has pretty much won the same way all year with defense, special teams, like trying to find a groove on offense. It looks like they started running the ball well about the middle of the year when Torrey Blaylock and Xavier Robinson started popping. But you look over at the other side of the ball, Alabama's been leaky lately. I mean, they went on that run. I think we all remember, you know, their four ranked teams in a row that they beat. And everybody was like, all right, you know, Ty Simpson, Heisman, you know, Heisman favorite. You've got all this going on. Well, their last three Power Four games are a loss to Oklahoma, a game against Auburn that they nearly lost, and that's not a great Auburn team. They've got a lot of talent, but it's not a great Auburn team. And I know people want to throw out the Iron Bowl. Oh, it's a, you know, it's anything can happen in Jordan Hare voodoo, and there's something to that. But also like, they weren't playing well before or after that. And then you go and nearly get skunked on offense from a Georgia team that you didn't look like you belonged on the field with offensively. I mean, Ty Simpson goes and completes 48% of his passes, you know, throws the pick. Like, just the offense does not look good. They already can't run the ball. So what do you think is wrong right now with Alabama? Is it as simple as they just were missing some guys against Georgia and they're getting some of those guys back? Is it that, you know, Ty Simpson's got blisters on his hand, I was told by an Alabama radio host yesterday on our show? Like, does he have back issues? Is it the protection that's leaky? I mean, what's going on here with Bama down the stretch, man?
I think when you look at them over the course of this year, I mean, even going back to like the Wisconsin game, and that's way early in the year, like Alabama's line of scrimmage has really never been good. And they've beaten some good line of scrimmage teams, Georgia included, that sort of cover up for that at different points in the year, but like the line of scrimmage has never been good. And so I think when you're trying to pick this game, you sit back and say, okay, how much does that matter? Because the law of football is big people move small people. If you got the big people moving the other people, yeah, like you should be in a good spot to win the game. But here's my thing I can't get past. This conversation we're having about Bama right now, post Georgia, them getting obliterated, Kalen DeBoer, you know, his seat's not hot. I don't want to go that far because I think that's a little bit egregious, people saying that. But, like, it's bad vibes in Tuscaloosa. I think everyone agrees. It feels really similar to me of the vibes we had post-Florida State after week one. And I was the one like, hey, I don't know about this Bama team, y'all. I don't know about Kalen DeBoer. I don't know about that defense. The Bama standard is non-existent. And then they go rattle off 8 in a row. Then they go find their way in the SEC championship game, all those things. And so my thing is, like, I can't tell how much stock to put into that title game, Travis. I think it matters 100%. I think it was a bad look. I think it's embarrassing, all those things. But I'm also like, man, we have seen wounded backed into a corner Bama before, and they seem to respond well to that. I think if Alabama finds a way to win this game, you go back to Kalen DeBoer, Ryan Grubb, Ty Simpson, getting in the lab, and finding a way to I guess, not get got the second time schematically. Because I think we all watched that game. We're like, y'all, Ty Simpson is in a blender right now. For the first time all year, Ty Simpson is not seeing it. He's giving the football away. He's sped up, all those things. And some of that, I think you give a lot of credit to the pressure from Oklahoma. But a lot of that, I'm like, Ty Simpson's just not seeing it. And so I am really curious to see, can you get the same quarterback in the context of the same season in a matter of what it's been like a month and a half since that game was played? Can you get him in a 6-week stretch, a guy who's been known for his acumen neck up? Can you get him twice? If you can do that, I mean, Brent Venables, all the head coach conversation, should he, is he, like, all that's dead. So that's my take on that. I'm worried about the response mechanism here from Bama, from OU.
You go back to the pressure that Oklahoma was able to create on Ty Simpson and on Alabama back on November 15th in Tuscaloosa, JD. And one thing, I know it's getting talked about a lot locally. I don't know how much it's getting talked about nationally, but Oklahoma happens to have an edge rusher who earned all SEC distinction after playing not even 8 full football games in the 2025 season. And he was not available the first time these two teams matched up. So how much does R. Mason Thomas's reintegration into the mix for Oklahoma affect your outlook on this game?
Can I add to that real quickly? Because Jaden Jackson also only got 12 snaps that game as well. And he's considered, Parker, right, like one of the top interior D linemen in the SEC.
No doubt.
So both those guys, what do you think?
Like, yeah. Yeah. If I'm Ryan Grubb and Kalen DeBoer, I think you have a problem up front to begin with. So the fact that R. Mason Thomas is in this game too is just like, okay, if we had a 1.5 Mississippis, now we got 1 Mississippi. Like, it's just the problem for Alabama to me is the same as it was before R. Mason Thomas. R. Mason Thomas being back in the game here just should exponentially increase your sense of urgency with how you're trying to beat that Oklahoma pressure. So I think the variance of R. Mason Thomas's impact here is what I'm looking at. Like, let's be real. He could wreck the game. Like, he could be the one where we have the same script. Bama outgains Oklahoma. Bama has the ball longer than Oklahoma. Ty Simpson throws for 300 yards again. But it's like, yeah, R. Mason Thomas had 2 sacks. One was a strip sack back to the crib for OU. And, like, that was how the game went. Like, sorry about your numbers, but that's how the whole game went. So that's, I think, like, at his peak, what he can be for OU. At a minimum, you say, well, he's still getting back into it. Again, Bama's planning for pressure to begin with. I wonder how much they account for 32 being back in this game. Because you'd like to think when clock struck zero in Atlanta and you found out you're in the playoff, if you're Alabama, that had to be one of your first thoughts, is like, okay, 32 is probably going to play here. Like, we don't know the injury report yet, but we got to at least account for him being on the field. So I think that's the thought for me, is like the problems were the same before R. Mason Thomas wasn't playing in this game. How much you account for him here is I think the biggest part of this game for Alabama.
So I was watching the film guy, Brooks Austin. He talked about, just like what you're discussing, the problems that Alabama has on the offensive line right now, particularly with the pass rush. And against Oklahoma, they were matching and trying to pick up the 6 blitzer with the running back and, you know, ID in the mic and all that type of stuff. But against Georgia, they just went with full on slides left, right. And they were just saying, we're just going to slide one way. And then the backers, or the running back's going to pick up the backside, whatever, whether it's outside backer, whether it's DN, whatever. That's kind of easing the issue. You add Jam Miller back into this. And everybody knows he's a good pass blocker. Do you go back to unsimplifying this against Oklahoma, or is it easier? I know it didn't really work out that well against Georgia, but is it easier for them to fully slide and just have Jam Miller or Hill or whoever just pick up the backside? Like, what's your thoughts on that? Because you don't, much like Kirby Smart, you don't know what BV is going to do. You don't know where the simulated pressure is coming from, or are they going to roll coverage and bring a blitzer in a disguised way? Like, that's the crazy part. Do you need to simplify it against a defense like that, or do you just keep it as is and start IDing things?
I think one, well, Brooks does an awesome job as the first part of this, but one, I think that the difference between a Georgia defense and an Oklahoma defense to me comes with like the creativity from Brent Venables. Like Georgia over the course of this year wasn't a great like rushing the passer team. They got home a few times against Alabama, but I think that was more personnel than scheme. Oklahoma, it's like we could bring a safety. We might peel that edge off and have him go cover our running. Like they're so creative and so exotic with what they do. I like the idea of saying, well, I like going back to what they had in that first game plan of trying to ID and pick people up in real time, because if you're just going to slide, I think Brent Venables says, okay, cool. I know you're going to slide this way. I'll bring pressure off the edge and be fine doing that. So I think that almost plays too easily into Brent Venables' hand. My thing is just like, let's get the ball out of Ty Simpson's hands quick. Like if we can protect him for more than two Mississippis, sensational. We can discuss that on the sideline and figure out how to dial up shot. But if I'm Bama, I'm like, we need answers pre-snap. Like, I don't want to have to block our Mason Thomas for longer than one miss. I don't want to have Jam Miller picking up where that's safe. I want the ball out quick. I want us taking positive yards, staying ahead of the sticks. If we can do that now, we can mellow out the defense. We can get Ty Simpson in a rhythm. We can get comfortable, and we can keep from getting got because we're not living in third and seven plus. So to me, the protection is obviously a huge part of it, but I'm more curious of like, okay, Ryan Grubb pre-snap, Can you get guys open before we even get rolling here?
Do you expect them to sugar huddle quite a bit this game? Like, we all know BV's notorious for having your signals dissected.
Sure.
Politically correct that one.
Sure.
Say very PC. Do they sugar huddle or that's not really their game? Ole Miss did it and they were successful for a half. Second half, they were not successful against Oklahoma. It almost cost them because BV, who he is, he figured it out, picked it up. You know, they got it all worked out and eventually came back and almost won the game. But do they sugar huddle? Do they try to do those type of things? Or is that just not – that's not who they are? So you don't really want to be who you're not in this type of situation, particularly on the road. Like, how do you work into that in your opinion?
Yeah, you know, I've never run a marathon or done the triathlon deal. I have friends that have, and they're saying is nothing new on race day. I'm same shoes, same socks, same goo, whatever I'm drinking, whatever they're doing at mile 15, whatever it is. That's
right.
Crazy talk. I kind of feel that way for Bama. Now, I do think, to your point, seeing Ole Miss have success with it makes me think you keep it in the back pocket and carry it if that's something that you're able to do over the course of these couple of weeks game planning. So I'd be surprised if we saw Bama come out like Ole Miss did in that first half. You're watching Ryan Grubb on the walkie-talkie and wait until the last, you know, few seconds. Mm-hmm. 15 seconds exactly, and then you go from there. But Simpson, I go back to what we've been all year, which is a step ahead schematically. I'm like, no, we can solve this problem. Like, I'm whether it's for better, for worse, whether it's a pride thing or not, like, we can solve this problem. Let's put our heads together and do it that way. So sugar huddle, I could see. I don't expect it to be like the bread and butter, though, in this game necessarily.
I think what fascinated me about, you know, the game against Alabama, everybody wants to talk about, oh, outgained him yardage, this, that, and the other, every advanced stat, right? But I think one of the stats that stuck out to me was starting field position, right? Oklahoma started with the ball four times in Alabama territory. Alabama never started past their own 30, right? There was an average starting position was 22 yards, a difference in favor of Oklahoma. Now, obviously, two of that is because of turnovers, because the third turnover was a touchdown. But with Alabama missing a field goal in what ended up being a two-point, you know, win, obviously, it got tipped. Tate Sandell hitting bombs, like Isaiah Cetania having the big return, you know, early that really set up Oklahoma in good field position. Is special teams maybe the part that gets ignored most about this Oklahoma team, and maybe just football in general and its ability to flip the field, change starting field position when you're dealing with defenses like Alabama's and like Oklahoma's?
Travis, I give you a bear hug right now, brother. I mean, I think you hit it on the head, man. I think you hit it on that. We said on our show, we have a segment throughout the week called What's Being Missed. And what's being missed in this game is last time, how much special teams played a factor. Like you just said, I mean, what, Oklahoma was 3 for 3 on field goals. Oklahoma, 3 punts inside the 20. Satania to the 42-yard return to set up one of those field goals. Meanwhile, Alabama, no punts inside the 20. No massive returns to speak of. And they were 0-for-1 on field goals. Like, special teams here, especially with how Oklahoma's played on defense, like, it's – It's a game of the margins. It's a game of the personality. And the personality for Oklahoma is we're not going to beat ourselves. We're going to be better than you in a third of the game. So am I a little biased because your boy ran down on kickoff a lot? Sure, maybe just a little bit. But I do think that in this game with the spread itself telling the story, it swung from 2.5 favoring Oklahoma to 1 favoring. It's been all over the place, but it's been within that 3-point margin. If we're using that plus last game as a teacher here, because I think we should, it's going to come down to special teams. And if that's the case now for Oklahoma, I think you got to feel pretty good about your chances.
Do you, first off, have you predicted the game yet?
On your side? Have. I have.
Okay. All right. So this isn't, if I get, I asked you three reasons why OU won, three reasons why OU lost, what would those be?
Three reasons why OU won. Oklahoma found something from a rhythm standpoint. Not they ran the football, not that they had this incredible day at the office offensively, but like they found something rhythm-wise to let that defense rest, get Sandell in position, get some confidence from Mateo. That'd be the first part. Second part, they turned over Ty Simpson at least once, preferably twice, would be the angle there for me. I think if you get two on Ty Simpson, maybe things get a little bit rattly there for Oklahoma as an or Alabama as an offense rather, and the vibe starts to swing back towards Oklahoma in a big way. And then third, Tate Sandell is a field goal. Like if it's going to be a 3-point spread, give or take here, I mean it's been all over the place, but I'm saying that's like the margins we're speaking in. You got to be perfect from three. So I think that's the recipe for Oklahoma success. I think for Alabama, if they're going to win the football game, I think Oklahoma at that point. You saw turnover material show up like you did against LSU. It's almost the inverse of what I just mentioned. I think Bama would have found something on the ground very quietly. Now, Alabama, Daniel Hill averaged 4 yards a carry last time they played. Now, it's a little bit skewed, like a 20-plus yard run that kind of factored in there. The game was never really in a spot where Alabama was running the football, but I think Bama finding something on the ground would make me nervous if I was Oklahoma. And then when it comes to that third reason, I'm trying to think of which one to land on. It probably does come down to special teams, though. I think Alabama would have found something. Or I'll go another direction here. I think you see another receiver step up for Alabama. Like Jeremy Bernard has been kind of the bell cow for them. Isaiah Horton's been great. But like, if you can have a Ryan Williams get back to what he's been at different points for Bama and be like a true go-to guy, or at least a true, hey, we got to worry about him guy over the course of this game, that's a lot of mouths to worry about for Oklahoma. That would make me nervous if I was a Sooner fan. Yeah. So those three would be my thoughts when it comes to how the whole thing could swing.
Do you think Alabama can find their run game though? Like, is that something you're confident in? Like, do you really feel Alabama can find a run game at this point in the season?
I don't think they can find one. I think they can manufacture one. I think some of it too is committing to it. And again, I think for Alabama, it's not going to be a day where they have 150 on the ground. Like, it's not. We all understand that. But if they can have something to at least set up a honest look from Oklahoma's defense where, hey, we're living in 3rd and 3. We're living in 2nd and 5 to where we can't be overly exotic as a defense, or we at least have to dial that back a touch because Daniel Hill is averaging 4 yards a carry again. Then play action opens up. Then matchups open up. All those things then that Oklahoma would be worried about and that would favor Alabama, that's then on the table. So I don't need a big day at the office, quite frankly, from either run game, but enough to set up our quarterback for Bama. That's what I would hone in on the most here if I'm a Crimson Tide fan.
All right, JD. We do this at the end of every podcast. We always predict the big games of the week. Obviously, there are 4 playoff games this weekend. And we'll just go through and each of us will just kind of break down our thoughts on all 4 of the games. I know you've already broke down all 4 of the games leading up to it. So the last one will be OU Alabama, obviously, because this is an OU podcast.
Sure.
But, does James Madison have a chance against the Oregon Ducks? I'm just going to go ahead and get it out of the way. Quack, quack, by a lot.
Yeah, I've been talking a good amount about how to bet this weekend with different people here in the office and, you know, our thoughts on it. I'm like, if you like Oklahoma or you like Alabama, just go ahead and tack on Oregon minus, what is it, 21, 21 and a half. It's been all over the place. Whatever it is, around three touchdowns, take Oregon to cover and then tack on whatever else you like this weekend. It's going to be bad, y'all. I don't let the kids watch the second half of this one, man.
Man, so I actually think from where I stand, looking at the brand of football that James Madison plays, I think they can stay within fighting distance of Oregon for a time, but there's just too much of a talent discrepancy for that to last for four quarters. So I bet you see a competitive first half.
Let's go, Parker.
In the second half, though, I think you see the Ducks pull away. It's just, you know, what's interesting to consider, though, is that Oregon's one loss this season did come to Kurt Cignetti in Indiana, and there's a very heavy JMU representation on that roster. So something to monitor there. But no, I like Oregon. I think it's a double-digit win. I don't think it's a blowout, but I think it's a comfortable win for Oregon.
Hmm. Parker with a deep cut as far as his prediction goes.
I like that.
There you go.
Yeah, Oregon, and I know we're about to get into it, but Oregon and Ole Miss, they're the biggest beneficiaries of this playoff structure. The 5 and 6 seed are the best possible places to be. You don't have any rust accumulating. You get a tune-up game against a G5 team, and Oregon is going to do just that. Treat it like a tune-up game. So Oregon, big.
Yeah. The other one, Ole Miss, Tulane. Look, Tulane made Drew Messemaker look human last time. I know it's a G5 game, championship game, but he turned the ball over more than we've ever seen. And a lot of those were tip passes. I get it. But, like, it were turnovers nonetheless, right? Like, whatever. But they're also dealing with a coaching change, much like Ole Miss. Ole Miss at least has a voice that's going to be sticking around afterwards, so they know that's where the program's headed, right, is with Pete Golding. That's not the case with Tulane. And Summerall's out. And, yeah, I don't know. I can't imagine Chambliss allows us to stay close, even with, you know, Kiffin not making the calls on the offense. I think Ole Miss covers. I'm less confident about that one than I am the James Madison Oregon one, just because I don't know what to get out of all the Ole Miss turmoil, how much that actually plays into this week. I think that Tulane is going to be focused, even with the coaching change. I just think they're going to be more talented. Ole Miss is just far more talented, and they're out. So, anyways.
No, I see this one similar to how Parker sees JMU Oregon. I think scrappy Tulane team, they'll at least have John Summerall on the sideline. It has just a better vibe, I think, for Tulane than what happened at Ole Miss. Like, I think you get galvanized Ole Miss, which shows up big in the second half. But, like, maybe that first half, we see him slow it down a little bit. Jake Retzlaff and the boys got that +1 quarterback run game where you get an extra blockage. Maybe keep things close, hang around, and then second half you see Ole Miss kind of turn it on and remember themselves. But the fact they played this game once now, maybe that has something to do with Tulane. Like, they're the lack of fear they would roll into this game with. So we'll see, but I do think Ole Miss wins. I think Ole Miss covers, but I think it's a little bit more backdoor-ish than maybe the game before it will, or the other G5 game, rather, with James Madison and Oregon.
Hey, Sooners and Sports fans, we will get you right back to the podcast, but first we want to give a huge shout-out to one of our sponsors, SeatGeek. It is a great time to go and see live sporting events right now. On SeatGeek, you have great ticket prices going on right now for this Friday night's OU Alabama home playoff game. If not that game, maybe you want to go and support your OU men's and women's basketball team. That's right. They are the Bedlam champs right now. Maybe you like NFL and NBA, which is rocking and rolling right now. That's right. You can not only get OU college football playoff home tickets on SeatGeek, but you can also get NBA tickets for the hometown defending champs if you live in Oklahoma. You can also get World Cup tickets with one of the world's largest sporting events right down the road in Dallas this summer. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one ticketing app. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. SeatGeek is the official marketplace for the Oklahoma Sooners, so all Sooners tickets on SeatGeek are authentic and secure. I love using SeatGeek. I used it this past week to make sure we got college football playoff tickets for my family. SeatGeek is not just a place to buy tickets, but also a place to check and make sure you're getting a good deal on your purchase. So if you're wondering if you're spending too much or being overpriced, SeatGeek has your back. Each ticket is rated from a scale 1 to 10, so you know if you're getting a good deal. So look for the green dot, which green means good, or red dot, which means bad. Plus, every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. So after all of that, make sure you go to SeatGeek.com and use the promo code OUINSIDER. That's right. It gets you 10% off any ticket with the promo code OUINSIDER on your next ticket purchase. Make sure you click the link in the description, download the app below, and have that code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek.
Yeah, the Rebels beat the Green Wave 45-10 back in week four. I don't think this game is quite that lopsided. Jake Retzlaff is quietly playing some really good football for the Green Wave. 14 rushing touchdowns this season, 16 on the ground. So he has been very effective as a rusher, but he's been their most effective option in the running game. And so I don't think the Green Wave have enough firepower, having their head coach on the sideline, their departing head coach, I should say, is significant. And Sumrall's presence versus Kiffin's lack thereof is probably enough to tighten this game up a little bit relative to their first encounter. But no, I still think Ole Miss wins this game handily, kind of similar to Oregon, JMU, what I just mentioned. There's too much of a talent discrepancy for Tulane to stay within striking distance for too long.
Yeah, I think I've always been, and I know that's probably unpopular, I think Lane's wildly overrated. But that being said, there's a reason that every school in the country seems to think that he's the absolute God's gift to coaching, or at least Jimmy Sexton makes everybody think that. But like, if he's really the best play caller in college football, then Ole Miss should struggle a bit, right? Like theoretically, like if we're just taking the bet, like that's why I talk about like, let's talk about like the DeBoer Saban thing. Like if DeBoer would have ran off two national titles right after, and there was no drop off after Saban, like that hurts Saban's legacy a touch. Cause it's like, oh, like, if you're the best ever at something, there should be a drop off. Well, Lane, if you're the best play caller in college football, there's going to be a drop off. And I think a pretty dramatic drop off in this situation. I think the Pete Golding, elevation was a complete panic move. I think that they were so worried about the committee dropping them in the playoff. They said, oh no, we got the head coach right on staff. Nothing's changed. Hey, committee, nothing's changed at all. Still same people here. I don't know what to tell you. So you can't really drop us because it's all these coaches. Like, I think it was rushed. I think it was sloppy. I think it's something they're going to regret. You have the worst side of the worst defense in the playoff, I think. And now that guy in charge of that defense is now the head coach of the team. All that being said, I think Ole Miss wins by two touchdowns.
He rambled off every reason why Ole Miss should lose. And he goes, well, that old Pat McAfee, pull it out, the rug out from underneath you at the end. So the next one obviously is Miami at Texas A&M. This is going to be a good game. I love this game. I think it's going to be, it's my favorite game on the weekend outside of the OU Alabama one, obviously. Carson Beck, right? He struggled a little bit this year, quite a bit this year. Then obviously you have Marcel Reed. You got Ruben Owens versus Mark Fletcher the third. Casey Concepcion, right? A&M. This is going to be fun. How's Miami's defense going to slow down Reed, Owens, Concepcion? Like, I think that's going to be an intriguing matchup. How does Miami attack A&M's defense? The best third down defense in all of college football, one of the best sack defenses in all of college football, one of the best TFL defenses in all of college football. By the way, they're behind Oklahoma in those categories. But nonetheless, you're also in College Station. And I'm not one of those that thinks College Station is like the scariest place in the world. It's a cult. I've say it's a cult, and I'm always going to say it's a cult down there. And I love how neutral you are. Every time we say something, you're like, Yeah.
Hey, I'm just taking the data here.
You cannot react to anything because you got to be the national guy. We don't. We say what we want. But yeah, it's a cult down there. It's a cult for a reason, but like it's a cult that everybody buys in down there, and to the point that they win now. Like, it's not your mommy and daddy's A&M. It's not our A&M when we grew up. Like, they're actually not going to lose 3 or 4 games this year, right? Like, that's normally what you expect. They're 8-4 A&M. That's what we joke about all the time, right, Travis? 8-4 A&M. And that's not who they are anymore, or at least this year. I just don't know that I can trust Miami. I've seen them falter against teams they shouldn't falter against this year. I've seen them beat teams like a Notre Dame, right, that they should. I just don't know that I can trust Carson Beck. I don't know that – I just think that A&M's defense gets him. I think they force a few turnovers. I think he starts to crumble late in the fourth, and A&M pulls away, and I think they win by 10-14 at the end of the day. I feel pretty confident in that, actually.
Well, first of all, I'm going to tell you what I think regardless. I mean, so I worked in college.
No, I know. I just love your reaction.
Yeah, I know. I love it. My face there is I've never been to a game in College Station, but I worked there for about 3 months. It is a cult. It is. Everything is A&M. Everything is 12th man. Everything is Aggies. And, like, the thing about it, too, if you're there, like, if you're within that bubble, like, you're into it, man. Like, it is the Kool-Aid you are drinking, for lack of a better expression. So I think that part of it now – there was a lot made about it being 11 a.m. kick and this and that. And, like, I think, obviously, if you're an Aggie fan, you'd like to have this one at night, right? You'd like for it to be prime time and Herbie and Fowler, whoever on the call. But I think at the exact same time, for the first playoff game in Kyle Field, I think they'll be pretty dialed up for it. My thing with A&M is I feel like we all sort of have amnesia about them, because I think there were signs at different points this year where we didn't trust Marcel Reed at different points. Or we didn't feel great about the defense at different points. It was all fair, and then it kind of came to fruition in that Texas game. We're all like, see, we knew it, we told you. But at the same time, like, there were real conversations being had across the sport of, like, hey, do you like A&M, Ohio State, and Indiana, or the field? And there were some people saying, we'll take that three versus the field. And so the Texas game to me hasn't caused me to forget what we thought they were over the course of this year. And I still think they're one of the best teams in college football. I still think when they're on, I think they're probably still one of those top three teams in the sport when it comes to what they could accomplish this year. So I'm with you. Like, I think Carson Beck is a lot better than he's given credit for, like, just by reputation and the Georgia stuff, whatever. I just think A&M's got too many ways to win. I think they've got too many ways to win. Them being at home, the fact they're off a loss, I like, actually. I think it kind of refocuses them. So I'm with you. I'll take A&M to win. I think it'll be somewhat close here. I think it'll be kind of dramatic at the end, but I think A&M gets it done. And depending where that line is at half or at half at kick, I'll go ahead and take A&M to maybe marginally cover.
Yeah, I've been drinking the maroon Kool-Aid since very early on in the season.
Yes.
I think Texas A&M is a serious player in this college football playoff field. And especially on their home field, in front of 100,000-plus screaming fans down in College Station. I like Marcel Reed and the Aggies to get this done. I actually think they win by multiple possessions. I think this is a double-digit win for Texas A&M. I feel very differently about Texas A&M and Miami, and it's been that way since, like, week 3 or week 4, right? I haven't really bought it with Miami. I've been pretty all-in on Texas A&M. If I'm going to stay intellectually consistent here, got to go with the Aggies, right? And I do, especially on their home field. I like this much more for Texas A&M than I like it for Miami. So give me the Aggies by double digits in this one.
Hey, real quick, Travis, wouldn't it be hilarious, though, Miami backdoors their way in to the playoffs and all of a sudden they make a freaking run? Wouldn't that just be so called?
Hey, yeah, well, Ole Miss did it in Omaha. So anyways, yeah, I think with this game, it, as much as I don't want to simplify it like this, I think the ACC sucks. So, like, I truly do. Like, and even though A&M's schedule wasn't, you know, a gauntlet that teams like Oklahoma or Florida played or anything like that, like, I think A&M has better players. Like, I just think they're a better team. Like, I the rationale, I know it feels lazy, but the ACC has been bad this year. Miami has bad losses. A&M has one loss to a team that half the ESPN networks and half everybody else was trying to push into the playoff with three losses because they're apparently the best team in the country with three losses. So, like, I don't know. I don't think that Miami's all that great. I thought they were really good early, but you know they made a bit of a fool of me down the stretch. But I like Texas A&M to get this done at home. It does, JD, as you alluded to. It pisses me off that this game's at 11, and I've got a lot of buddies that want to go to both but can't because of that. You know, you're leaving Norman at midnight. I mean, if you you know, if you're driving it, you basically have to drive and go right to your seat for the most part. But, you know, I think they really botched that. I think it's really unfortunate that this is going to be an 11 a.m. game. I think it could have been one of the more iconic television moments even. I mean, obviously there, but that stadium at night for a playoff game would come across the TV very well. So I don't know if they're worried about competing with Saturday NFL games or I don't know what's going on. But anyways, I've got SEC over ACC here by 6 points.
Okay. Well, we've all kind of agreed, right, on everything at this point. I think this is where this is the game we're going to have some differing of opinions. Oklahoma, the first Alabama. Oklahoma hosting Alabama for the first time in playoff in program history. They're hosting, one, a late mid-December game. To a postseason game on Owen Field. That has never happened in program history. Very cool deal for Oklahoma. Plus, they get Kirk Herbstreit, Chris Fowler on the call. College game day is going to be in town. This is going to be an amazing atmosphere in Norman, Oklahoma. And it should be a really good game. Having said that, I have gone back and forth in my head all week on this. And I'm still not really 100% sure how I feel about this game just because I think it's that. I think the betting line proves just how tight this ball game is. I don't think, and I think it would be the same thing if it was in Tuscaloosa. I think you look at it and a lot of people would feel the same way. Like it is very, very down the middle, a pick 'em game. Oklahoma's already proven they can go to Tuscaloosa and win, right? That can't be denied. They've proven they can blow Alabama out as well last year in Norman. Does OU have Alabama's number? I think that's the biggest question everybody wants to know. We're going to find out tomorrow night or tonight, whenever you're listening to this. But at the end of the day, I trust Brent Venables' defense more than I trust anything else in this whole game. They've proven it. They've gone on the road to Tennessee, and I know Vanderbilt did as well, and they won the ball game, right? Other people have gone into, you know, Neyland Stadium and won. But Oklahoma did it when they did the blackout, the dark mode. Everybody, nobody thought Oklahoma was going to go in. They just, the defense just pounded Heupel's offense. They went into Tuscaloosa when they shouldn't have and won. They started to look a little bit, the defense never looked pedestrian against LSU or Missouri, but the offense looked a little bit shaky, missing the center, right? And Jake Mikula and not having a run game because both the running backs are hurt. They're all healthy. Mikula, not really, but the running backs are healthy. Things are looking a lot better. Mateer looks a lot more healthy. Venable said he's a lot more healthy. How is that going to affect? You said that, right? You asked that question. Parker, we said the exact same thing on our podcast the other day. Like, how much mentally is that going to affect John Mateer? I think it's positive. I think Oklahoma wins, but they win on a Tate Sandell kick late in the ball game. I have Oklahoma 27, Alabama 24. I actually think Alabama gets 24 points this time. I think it gets scary, but I think Mateer plays well enough that they win. I've been 1 point off the last three games on my predictions. So we'll see how close this gets.
Gosh. Much like you, I went I've been all over the place on this game throughout the course of, I mean, since we got the playoff matchups, I was like, gosh, we got to pick that one again. Interesting. So here's what I don't want to do, and I think some people will do when they pick Alabama, is almost disqualify what Oklahoma's done as fluky or as a product of other teams not being on their P's and Q's or being lucky with their, Oklahoma's a really freaking good football team. And so that's not me giving up moral victories. Like, that's just the fact of the matter. The thing I'm trying to square is, do I really believe that Alabama as an overall outfit and Ty Simpson as a quarterback are going to give up the football three separate times? Now, I know one of those was a special teams turnover, but even that kind of adds to my point is, like, can you really bank on that being the case again? And as sped up as Ty Simpson was the first time they played, the fact that they get him in the context of the same season, if we're running this thing back next year with different personnel groupings, and maybe it's different defense for Oklahoma, whatever. But the fact that it's the same season, Kalen DeBoer has lost back-to-back games in a season twice throughout his career. Once was his first year at Washington. The other was COVID at Fresno State. So the guy doesn't really lose back-to-back all that much. That plus the fact that I think when you look at, again, what we said before, how Bama has seemingly responded to failures over the course of this year. They've sat back since they lost that game in Atlanta and heard about how they're soft, how they are, not supposed to be in this playoff by nature of how they lost to Georgia. And so I think all that, based on what we've seen from them, I think they'll use that the right way. I think it's close. I think that it in a lot of ways, it could come down to those margins here. But I think Alabama does give the football up the same way. I think they score more in the red zone. Didn't turn the football away like they did in the red zone the first time around. And I think Alabama narrowly gets it done in Norman and advances.
I'm a man of the people, and every time I pick against OU this year, they win the football game. So, mindful of the desires and hopes of all of our fine listeners out there, I should say most of them, no doubt we have some Alabama people listening too, but yeah, I'm going to take Alabama to win this football game, 48-17. Crimson Tide slam Oklahoma this Friday night. So there you go, folks. Make your wagers accordingly. I have picked the Crimson Tide. You're welcome.
48-17. All right.
Are you saying that tongue-in-cheek? Are you being...
Yes, highly tongue-in-cheek.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. I was right.
He doesn't actually believe that.
I think. Is Parkage calling a shot right now? I was like, here
we are. We're sticking with what's been working.
It's going to suck if that really does happen, though, dude. Just going to tell you no.
I picked against them for Tennessee. They won. I picked against them the first time around against Alabama. They won. And so it's just become tradition. Every single pregame podcast now, I pick against Oklahoma, and they keep winning. So we'll keep the good juju going for Sooner
Nation. Hey, I'm with you there, Parker. I'm on the exact same side of that coin, man. So Oklahoma fans, if it happens here, me and Parker carrying we're willing Oklahoma forward in this playoff if they beat Alabama here.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm gonna be honest with mine. Straightforward. Here we go. So. It's, you know, people talk about turnovers. Oh, it's random. Can you replicate that? I don't think Oklahoma necessarily needs to replicate three or in the way that they did. But in the regular season games, Oklahoma's 5-0 against Bama all time. They've scored defensive touchdowns in four of those five wins. So when you look at, you know, actual turnovers, this isn't a situation where, you know, in the first game, Alabama snapped the ball over Ty Simpson's head and he tripped and, you know, Oklahoma just found the ball. You know, he didn't throw just an arm punt deep ball to a safe. Like, it was, they were forced, like absolutely forced turnovers. On the punt, Jaden Hardy punches the ball out from behind, right? You know, they fool him another time. And then obviously Taylor Wine comes screaming around the edge while he has to pull down off his hot read and he gets smoked. Ball comes out, right? Like, absolute forcing of turnovers. I think Oklahoma's defense is going to be, in a game of inches, I think they're going to be multiple feet better with R. Mason Thomas and a healthier Jaden Jackson on the interior. I think that Oklahoma at home, I think the environment is going to be insane. Brandon touched on it earlier about the, you know, historic nature. And really what I think matters most in this, and I know it's kind of, I don't know, it's good for shows. I don't know how much it gets into locker rooms, but it certainly shows up on social media after the game. The hard to kill mantra, the fact that every Alabama media opportunity out there, players are making excuses as to why they actually lost last year. Oh, it was the weird lights they had. It was I couldn't see. No, it was you know, or oh, is that what caused Jackson Arnold to run all over you all day? I don't think so. But it's the weird lights, or oh well, Ty Simpson's got a little you know, blister thing going on, or he may not be right, or oh, what, you know, what really happened was this, that, and the other. It's like Alabama's full of excuses. People all across the country are writing off Oklahoma because they don't have Baker Mayfield standing in the pocket. Oklahoma is a favorite in this game, according to Vegas. 1.5-point favorite. And they are being treated as if they do not belong as a home favorite in the playoff, that they shouldn't even be there. So I think this is perfect fuel for Brent Venables to say, hey, guess what? All these guys that sit up here, all these former quarterbacks that are on all these shows that think the only way you can win a football game is to score 50. Well, they still think you stink anyways. So go out there as a, I mean, how many opportunities do you get to get bulletin board material as a home favorite against a team you've already beat? Like, so I think Brent Venables is going to channel that. He's one of the best, turn up his guys. I think his defense is going to play incredibly violent. Kip Lewis's head might explode due to just general energy he's going to have running around. I think Oklahoma wins a close one. I think they take two Tate Sandell field goals along with two touchdowns to get their 20 points. And I think Alabama scores 17. So Oklahoma wins by 3 and moves on as the underdogs, you know, lifelong underdogs, I guess.
JD, when you said that they've heard about how soft they've been talking about Alabama, I was sitting here thinking Oklahoma's heard about how they don't belong for the last 3 weeks.
Yeah,
true. This is going to be fun. Like, I'm so excited for this game, man. We really do appreciate you coming on with us. This has been an amazing pregame podcast. You want to know who your the other pregame podcaster guest was this year? Take a guess. You're going to laugh at this.
Jay Crane?
It was before the Michigan game. Think Scandal.
Oh, gosh. I didn't want to guess at that point, then. I'm going to just lay
no,
off.
When I say Michigan Scandal, I'm sorry. That totally, because there's so many scandals at Michigan. That's fair.
That's fair.
There's too many.
He got it.
Was it Stallions?
It's Stallions, yeah. It was
no
Stallions.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That is so funny.
He got our podcast even banned at one point because he kept showing the All 22 and sharing his screen, trying to break down his thoughts. Yeah.
No
kidding. We had to go plead with YouTube.
Scandal, I was like, Scandal, Michigan. Yeah. I'm gonna just hold off on that one right now. That's so funny. Wow.
Yeah. So you and Stallions, man, and so that's pretty cool. Like, he was a really good guest, by the way. So no shade at him. He's a good dude, really. He gets very I think the Netflix doc kind of paints him differently than maybe he really is. He's a very different dude, though. But we love him. We love him. Nice guy. Anyways, but we really appreciate you coming on, man. It was amazing having you on here. Your thoughts, your insight, your knowledge of the game, always respected, always appreciate it. It makes for a good podcast, man. A really good podcast.
And so I appreciate you. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate y'all. Y'all do an awesome job here, man. It's fun to be on anytime, seriously.
Oh, man, thank you so much. Well, that's going to do it for this version of the OU Insider Under the Visor Sooners pregame podcast powered by Riverwind Casino. If you're not subscribed to OU Insider, there's the hard to kill shirt if you're watching on YouTube. Travis was going to say whipping it out, but he's just showing it.
Oh, talk about Michigan. My goodness.
Yeah. All right. If you're not subscribed to this YouTube or podcast platform, please hit that subscribe button. We are getting closer to 25,000 on YouTube. Thank you guys so much. Trying to hit that 25K by spring. We do this because you OU fans, you college football fans, we're blessed to do this job. And it really is. It's an amazing. And we thank you guys so much. Make sure you hit that like, the subscribe button. Make sure that hype, I guess, a new thing on YouTube. It really helps us with the algorithms. If you're not subscribed to OU Insider, it's 50% off right now. College football sell right now. Playoff sell right now. Going on right now, 50% off. You can get it a whole year, $59.99. Plus, you get The Athletic, complimentary on 3 plus OU Insider. You guys get access to every On3 site as well. You get access to our man, JD Pickell. You get access to everything on On3 if you sign up right now. All you have to do is type in the URL, OUinsider.com. Click that green Join Now button. It'll send you to a page where you can sign up right now. 50% off for a whole year. $59.99 regularly, $119.99. Great deal. Recruiting, transfer portal, college football playoffs, basketball, all that coming up right now. Plus, you get access to all 86 On3 sites as well. So not just OU Insider. It's a really, really good deal. All right. For Travis Davison, for Parker Thune, for our main man, J.D. Pickell, my name is Brandon Drum. That's going to do it for this version of the OU Insider Under the Visor Sooners pregame podcast, college football playoff version. We will see you on the postgame. You guys have a blessed day.